We use the breath for a way to come into the present moment because it's now. The breath is happening now. So anytime we contact the breath, it's immediate. I'm here, this moment. So it's a very helpful, it's very useful for us in our meditation. It's not just because we're staying with the breath doesn't mean it's a good meditation. It's just a support. It's just a way to help us go in to this sense of present moment. And so the mind isn't so active. The only thing that really obscures this sense of present moment experience is the mind, because we get so caught up in our thinking about the past or planning the future or our fantasies or memories or regrets, our worries. And the energy goes right up into the head. And then we're not even aware of our body. We may not even be aware that we're walking or we're eating. Some people have said that when they're eating, just go into the thinking, right? Because it's a habit. It's a habit. That's all. So when we are on a meditation retreat, we practice with, while we're eating, to eat, to taste the food, to chew the food, to let the food come down into the stomach, to feel what's happening in the body. We really allow that fullness of the experience of eating. Call it eating meditation. Right? Again, keeping the mind, seeing if we can keep the mind clear so we can enjoy the food. I mean, the food, the lunchtime on a retreat is the highlight of the day. For many people, it's the best time of the day to walk up to the table, to see that beautiful presentation, all the colors and the smells and the, you know, that anticipation of eating that delicious food, you know, is like so sensuous, pleasurable. But sometimes we miss it. Because we're occupied, the mind is occupied with other things. Mm-hmm. So we can use that too as an opportunity to see if we can be in the present moment, particularly when it's pleasurable. You know, I mean, some people have a mixed relationship with eating. Sometimes the eating is not pleasurable. It brings up a lot of memories or complications. It's complex around food and eating. So that may happen too. It's not necessarily pleasurable for everyone, but generally it can be. So we want to work with this sense of this present moment, coming more fully into the body, into the senses, whether we're with the breath, mingling the breath, feeling the breath with the fullness of experience. We talked about the postures, being aware when I'm sitting, the sitting posture, the standing posture, walking. I know when I'm walking, just walking and feeling and sensing what's happening all around. But I know where I am. I know I'm walking. Or lying down. When I'm lying down, the four postures, the Buddha says, to be mindful in the four postures. So aware when I'm lying down, aware of the feeling of lying down. Mindfulness, the mind is still alert. The mind is awake when I'm lying down. Until I fall into sleep. And then when sleep comes, there's no more consciousness. Sometimes there can be consciousness of dream, of the dreams, but there's also deep sleep where there's no awareness. And that deep sleep is a time of really deep rest. It's so important for us as human beings to have deep sleep, because we need that that recharging, that nourishment, where there's just everything stops. Everything stops. Very important for us. And then there's the dream states where there's still some awareness, and then there's the waking consciousness, or waking state. So we bring our awareness to all as much as we possibly can. And then our activities, the work meditations, or the times we're taking care of our bodies, or we're engaged in different kinds of jobs or errands that we're doing, that too, we're bringing our mindfulness to those times. That's all the body. This is all the times where we're mindful of our body, seeing if we can keep the mind here, focused, attentive to what we're doing, what we're engaged in. This, I know where I am. This is really so key. I know where I am. This awareness, this is the awareness. Awareness knows. And then we have the mind. The troublesome mind. So the body and all of its different activities, and then the mind. And we've begun to look at the mind and the particular tendency of the mind to hold on, to grasp. We call it reactivity or grasping. Mm. Holding, attaching. Mm-hmm. So holding on to what it likes, what I like, and what I want to stay, and pushing away what I don't like, what I don't want to stay. And that whole mechanism of control, where I think I can control that. I can hold on to what I like and make it stay, and I can push away what I don't like and keep it away. And then I can control my whole reality that way, right? And this is what we stay very busy with. It's called ego mind, the ego mind, the self. We stay very busy with controlling our reality. And I think the best example is teenagers, adolescent mind. They just think they can, you know, do anything they want to do, you know. And they're busy, you know, engaging in all the activities that they like and feel good, and getting rid of all the things that don't feel good. And it's, you know, very busy with that. Very busy. We call it the adolescent mind or the teenage mind. But we see that it's stressful. There's a certain level of stress in that. We're being pushed and pulled by the things that we like and the things that we don't like. And it's constant. There's always things we like and things we don't like. There are things that are pleasurable and things that are unpleasant. All the time. All the time. In Buddhist psychology, in every moment of every sense arising, of sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, and a thought, there is a quality of pleasant or unpleasant. Every moment, every sense, call it a sense object, through the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, and the thought, the thinking, all of them have what's called a feeling tone, a quality. In the Pali language or Sanskrit, it's called vedana. And it has a quality of pleasant or unpleasant. And then there's the in-between, pleasant and unpleasant. We call it neutral. It's also, if you understand in the chemistry, there's a valence. It's a charge. So it can either be a pleasant, like it's joyful, feels good, charge, or on the other end, unpleasant or painful charge. And then in the middle, there's not much at all. It's just neutral, kind of plain, just plain. There's not much charge, there's not much energy. And what's interesting is that very much of our experience is in the middle. It's not really so pleasant, and it's not really so unpleasant or painful. It's just ordinary, neutral, just not much is happening. But for the ego mind, don't like that. Don't like nothing happening. I want something to be happening. I want it to be usually pleasant. That's what I want. I don't want just flat. I know, then we use the word boring. It's boring. Nothing's happening. And to the sense of me that I identify with as a self, me, I want something to happen. You know, this is our whole world gets caught up in this being productive, being engaged, you know, being creative, you know, making things happen. I mean, I don't know your culture so well, but in where I live, particularly in the San Francisco area, there are 12 million people. Just when I think about here in this country, 300,000 in one country, we have 12 million in one area that's smaller than this. And it's just buzz. I know many people have been to New York or London, or, you know, it's just buzz. It's just like a beehive of energy, right? And everybody's busy doing something. Being productive, being engaged, trying to get things done, doing, doing, doing. And usually going after things that feel good. Want things that feel good and don't want things that don't feel good. And so there's this buzz is all around this activity of doing. Because the mind, this ego mind does not like flat, ordinary, simple, generally. And the thing is that is actually where we find our peace. That's where it's peaceful. So in the Buddha's teachings, it's so much about the simplicity, becoming simple. Now, and again, I don't really know so much about your culture, yet it appears that it's much more simple than mine, just in all that charge. I don't know. But there's, in particularly with this, the vast open nature, it's so, so beautiful, so sublime, and so easy to come into. It's not far away, it's right here. All the nature is right here. For us, we may have to travel a bit, we have to go a bit to be in the open, quiet space. There's lots of it, but you have to take time to go there. So that's what the Buddha is saying, just slow down, become more simple. And as we come into the simplicity, it's not just simple just to be simple, but because in that, when the movement between the grasping after the pleasure, what's going to make me feel good, what makes me feel good about myself, and then rejecting and pushing away what doesn't feel good, that movement is stressful. It's stressful to the system, to the mind and the body. The mind gets very restless, agitated, worried, and it moves. When we talk about the mind moves to the past, the far past, to the past, to the present, concerned about the present, and then into the future, and then the far future, which we call time. The movement of time. And the mind moves in vast amount of time, way back into the past, way into the future. And that movement can be stressful if we're not aware of what's happening. Because usually underneath that is fear. It's motivated by fear. Because if I can go back into the past and understand it and recreate it, change it, somehow change the past or change the way I understand the past, maybe then I'll feel peaceful. Or maybe if I can imagine the future in such a way and plan it and have good ideas and get it all set up and make it happen, I'll feel peaceful. It's a long way around. We say it's the wrong end of the stick. No, that is not going to be the way to peace, because we're just running around in time, running around like a hamster on a wheel, a rat on a wheel, just going around and round and round and round and round and round. There's no way out. There's no way out of time. We just run in time. Until we recognize that which is timeless awareness, consciousness, awareness. It's not in time, it's just here. Not even here, that's already time. We have to even let go of here. Let go of here. Let go of the present moment. Let go of now. Let go of all the words. Then we touch it. Then we taste it. Because all words are in time. All words are past, present, future. All words are memory. Everything the mind thinks, everything the mind talks about is all memory. It's all from the past. It's old, all old, stagnant. My teacher in India, Papaji, I was with Papaji, this wonderful, wonderful teacher for a long time. He said it's like when we're caught up in our mind of time, past, present, future, and that's all we think there is, he said it's like dragging corpses around. Just dead bodies. It's a strong, strong image, huh? It can feel like that, though. The experience is like that. It feels, we want to let it go. So we start to understand a little bit more about the mind, this mind, how we get caught in the holding on to the pleasure and push away the pain. And in the second foundation of mindfulness, in the Buddhist teachings, he made this very important teaching about this pleasant and unpleasant, knowing the quality of experience, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, because that's where we get caught. The pleasant experience is subject to grasping. It doesn't mean that we will grasp. It doesn't mean just because an experience is pleasant, we should, we can't have pleasant experience. It just means it's slippery. it's a slippery slope to attachment. Because when we like it, we want to hold it. It's just slippery. This, you know, slippery, yeah. So that's why the mindfulness is so important. Because if we're not paying attention, we're already wanting it. And then pushing away, rejecting that which we don't want, don't like, doesn't feel good. And yet when we look at experience directly, it's always changing. And every moment has this pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So if we look at it, it's just constant shifting and changing. So if we're trying to control that, it is like, it makes us crazy. We go crazy. People go crazy. Sometimes we call it neurosis, you know, neurotic. We're neurotic about it. And of course, then this leads to addiction, this very, very problematic situation of addiction in our humanity. Huge, huge issue of addiction. Because it's so hard to stay with the pain. So hard for us to stay, as human beings, to stay with pain. Now pain medication has become the newest addiction. People getting pain medication and then just using it to numb, to become numb. Very, very serious, you know. It's very serious in our human condition, the numbing. The denying, pushing away. Because, and it's not that we can't be with pain, it's we have to learn. It's a learning how to open again, how to be able to be present, how to be aware, mindful, with the painful element of life. The first truth of the Buddha is there is suffering in this life. There is pain in this life. Birth is painful. Sickness is painful. Old age is painful. Dying and death is painful. Losing what we love is painful. Not getting what we want is painful. Or dukkha, the word is dukkha. Another way to say it is it's not satisfactory. When we lose what we love, people that we love, it's painful, it's dukkha, it's suffering. So this is life, it's life. It's not, we can't change it. So the teachings are how to open to, how to be with, how to be present with the painful aspect of our life. So we aren't pushing it away. We're not rejecting, we're not denying, we're not annihilating. We want to annihilate, we want to kill. This is war and violence. We kill human beings because we don't like them. We hate them. And the whole world, it's so painful. It comes out of this confusion, this deep confusion about life, the nature of life, the nature of this existence, this experience. And we need to learn again how to be present, be mindful, with the painful aspect of our life. Otherwise, we're caught in this wheel. Wheel, it's called the wheel of samsara, you know, in Buddhist language. Samsara is this wheel of birth and death. Birth and death. And we're caught in that world. We don't want things to die. Or we do want things to die. You know, it's just this wanting, wanting, wanting. Maybe you've heard this. There's a Mulla Nasruddin. There's lots of stories about this Sufi mystic, Sufi master, teacher. And this story is Mulla Nasruddin went to the market and saw a big bushel of hot chili peppers on sale. And he bought them, he returned home, and began to eat. A little while later, his disciples, his students, came over and he saw the mulla with tears streaming down his face, and his mouth and his tongue were burning. And they said, "Mulla, mulla, why do you keep eating these hot chili peppers?" And as he reached for another one, he said, "I keep waiting for a sweet one." Keep waiting for a sweet one. Right? Can you, here on retreat, can you feel that in your own experience, how you keep waiting? And how maybe you're disappointed or bored because it's not sweet enough. There is maybe a feeling of postponing, waiting. Our life is always waiting until we get what we want, waiting until our experience feels good, waiting until the right person comes into our life, our loved one, waiting for the right job, waiting until I get enough money, waiting until my body gets well and healthy, waiting, then I'll be okay. Then I'll be peaceful. Then I can rest. Then we die. This is sad. This is the predicament. This is our predicament. So the meditation helps us maybe let go and just rest now. And then we may not like what's happening. But that's what we are given. This is what we're given in this moment. It's unpleasant. So then what? How can I be with that? What can I do with that? If I'm given something pleasant, then how am I going to be with that? Am I going to try to make sure that it doesn't go away? Then it becomes unpleasant. The holding, the grasping, the reacting. So this way of being, just being open, being receptive, welcoming what comes and letting go as it goes, not holding on to anything. Things come, they go. Things come and they go. And we just stay present right here in this welcoming, awake, aware, just allowing this flow. The flow of life, the flow of conditions. This is what the meditation can help us feel this ground, just the ground, the settling, the being here, just being here as things pass. Things arise, dissolve, come and go, pleasant, unpleasant. Even the reaction can come and go, or the grasping comes and goes. It's all happening in the space of awareness. all happens in the space of awareness. So just even as you're sitting here right now, just have a sense of your experience, perhaps, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant or somewhere in between, it's more neutral. Just kind of feeling and sensing what your experience is. And then seeing if you can breathe with the experience. Just breathe with the experience, with the feeling of the experience. So your breath is also engaged. Because sometimes if we're not so aware, we can be holding the breath a little bit. Just being back a little bit from experience. So the breath helps us release into the experience. It's like going into the water, going into the river, becoming part of the flow with the breath. It's like breathing in life, letting go. Breathing in and letting go. So the out-breath is a symbol of the release, a symbol of the letting go. We breathe it in, and then we let it go. And life moves in this way. Whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or in between. And noticing that if it's in between, if it's kind of neutral, notice the quality of your mind. Is the mind quiet? Is the mind peaceful? And just let that happen, let it be. Because this is a taste of the peace. This is a taste of peace. The peace that we are longing for. So we can taste it. It's quiet, still. And then we breathe. Breathing in with the peacefulness and breathing out with the peacefulness, not holding on. Because it changes. We can't hold on. Because life is flowing all the time. And life is bigger than me. Life is bigger than you. So we don't know what's going to happen. Anything can happen at any moment. It is out of our control. If it was just me, I could control it. I could keep things from happening, like I'm God, right? I'm God. I can keep things. I can stop the storms and the earthquakes and the volcanoes, and I can stop it. We can't. We know that. So there's all these factors, there's all these conditions that are outside of my control. I can't even control my body. I can't control my mind, let alone nature and other people. All I can do is see if I can stay present and grounded, connected, here. So that when something happens, perhaps I can meet it. Perhaps I can engage with wisdom, with compassion, with awareness, presence. Then it's more likely I can respond in a way that will be helpful or useful. So Let's sit just quietly for maybe 5 or 7 minutes and just kind of take this in. Take it in, watching your mind, watching your experience. Your eyes can be open or closed, however you feel you would like to sit now. And every now and then, just check and see, is it pleasant, unpleasant, or in between? Just kind of getting a sense of that. The mind, the body, the senses.